appreciated. Aha. We really appreciated our own bodies. What a beautiful turning towards the positive with gratitude. So I thought, yeah, let's focus on gratitude this evening. It seems particularly appropriate to me, you know, with 5 hours to go before the end of the year, that perhaps we can focus our reflection. Reflection, I can't say is my strength, but when I do reflect, I kind of need a theme, something to focus my mind a bit, something around which I can gather my thoughts, a theme. And I think this gratitude is a beautiful theme in a way to focus one's reflection. So yes, this retreat is very much about reflection. It's about looking back over the year. It's about looking forward to the year to come. So this evening session is more about perhaps looking back over the past year. Now, I'm not assuming you've had a good year. You know, maybe you've had a difficult year. Maybe when if you were first approached with the question, you what have you got to be grateful about in this past year, you might be a bit stuck. Maybe not. I hope that in the course of the next few minutes, I'll give you some possible hints as to what you might appreciate from the past year. That there might, hopefully, that somewhere in the bag that there's you'll be able to pick up on a point of gratitude. What we'll do is we'll look at possible reasons to be grateful. I'll talk about the beauty of gratitude, and then we'll do what's called Katanyata Bhavana. So it's like the other bhavanas, cultivation practices, Metta Bhavana, Mudita Bhavana, cultivating the states of loving kindness or sympathetic joy. This is cultivating the state of gratitude, the Katanyata Bhavana. And we'll do a practice, a led practice of the Katanyata Bhavana. And hopefully it will make sense in the context of what I'm going to say first about Katanyata, gratitude. So we're looking at it from the point of view of an active practice that we can engage in that is so consistent with the Buddha's teaching, gratitude. We know from secular mindfulness that we are hardwired to pick up more easily on the difficult, on the negative, on the threats rather than the treats in life. It apparently has given us, you know, an advantage, an evolutionary advantage, so that we place more emphasis, we kind of ratchet up our sense, our sensitivity to the threats. So the possibility that a rustling bush might have a saber-toothed tiger behind it ready to pounce on us and make us dinner, that it's the experience, the sense experience of the rustling of the bush is kind of hyped up, dialed up in our minds, compared with the sight of the fruit on the trees. If we get it wrong with the rustling bush, we won't be around to enjoy the fruits of from those trees. Whereas if we get it wrong with the fruits on the trees, well, likelihood, or if we miss them, we'll be around the next day to find other possible sources of nourishment. So you can see why it's kind of hardwired into our brains to respond to the threats and the difficulties like they are what's that sticky substance Can't think of it. Anyway, it's like they really stick to us, the experiences of the difficult. Whereas the analogy used for the positive, the pleasant experiences, it's like it's Teflon. We are less, our sensitivity is much less. We have to experience them for longer for them to register as much. So given that, we are hardwired to be more sensitive to the negative. We need to kind of, as the saying goes, the phrase goes, we need to bend the bamboo in the opposite direction. We need to increase our sensitivity and appreciation of our blessings. So I like to call this kind of a practice of counting our blessings. How can we cultivate this practice? And you know, it's a delightful practice, isn't it? It's such an attractive quality, gratitude, in anybody that we meet. It's kind of a gracious quality, and it's absent. We notice its absence. You know, we notice when somebody doesn't. Is ungrateful. It's just a very unattractive quality, lack of gratitude. So can we be more conscious about gratitude for the graces, if you like, that we do have, the blessings that we do have, and can we make our gratitude less conventional, so that when we say thanks, we really mean it from the heart, rather than just saying thanks in a mechanical way. Can we reduce the tendency to take our blessings for granted? Simple things like, I've before breakfast, when I'm putting the honey on the coating of yogurt, I'm a creature of habit when it comes to breakfast. I have a little prayer, really, you could say, gratitude prayer. Receiving this food, I acknowledge and celebrate the fruitfulness of the earth and the work of human hands that have brought this to me. What I receive, may I give back in generous measure. So there are lots of little ways during our day, can, if you like, dial up our sense of gratitude, our sense of counting our blessings. But the Buddhist tradition, particularly the Tibetan tradition, focuses on this sense of the preciousness of human life. What an opportunity we have as human beings. There's a reflection, a traditional reflection. It's seen as a foundational practice in the Tibetan tradition, that there's this set of foundational practices, the mind-turning reflections. And the reflecting on the preciousness of human life is the first of those reflections. It's a way of focusing, all these reflections really are a way of focusing on what is truly of value, what will truly make us happy, what can be our guiding stars in our lives, what is worth going for refuge to. That's what these mind-turning reflections are about. And I think that this first reflection, preciousness of human birth, is particularly strong and positive, and sets the stage for perhaps more challenging reflections later on about impermanence and shortness of life and the deficiencies of the contingent world, samsara. So it's I think it's a beautiful. If you were to do one of the four mind-turning reflections, do the first one, preciousness of human birth. It's such a positive one. And it starts with the human body, focusing, appreciating, as we were earlier today with Machu Picchu, we were looking at the the preciousness of our own human body, appreciating our body, appreciating its beauty, its uniqueness. And, ideas of perfection or of beauty are just conventional. Every human body is perfectly human, and doesn't need to conform to external conventions. Every human body is unique, and the Tibetan tradition, as I say, in particular, has over the centuries focused on this glory that we have. There's a verse from Tsongkhapa, who was a teacher from the 14th, 15th century. The human body at peace with itself is more precious than the rarest gem. Cherish your body. It is yours this one time only. The human form is one with difficulty. It is easy to lose. So a sense of its preciousness and its impermanence, which kind of accentuate each other. The fact that it's impermanent, the fact that it's fleeting, makes it all the more glorious. Like a shooting star, the fleetingness of a flower just makes a flower all the more beautiful. There's this story of the turtle that lives at the bottom of the seven oceans. I went back to Dublin over Christmas, and a relation got a present of a snake and was handing the snake around the room, but it was in a very sort of placid state. Anyway, not everybody wanted to touch it, but the same relation has a turtle in a water closet, a water box. Anyway, there's this turtle that lives for thousands of years at the bottom of the seven oceans, right? And every once in 100 years, the turtle rises to the surface to take a breath. I don't know how the story goes, but there's also this yoke. So a wooden yoke around that would normally be around a horse. You could imagine a life buoy that's floating on the seven oceans. Now, what is the chance of the turtle coming to the surface and finding its head poking through this constantly moving yoke? That's the chance of one coming to possess a human body, according to the Tibetan tradition. What a beautiful image for the preciousness of human life. And the tradition goes on in its exploration, in its reflection on the preciousness of human life. It looks at the freedoms, what are called the freedoms and endowments. So conditions, I suppose you could call these privileges, couldn't you? The fact that we live in a society that is reasonably stable. There's more or less law and order. It's certainly compared with Gaza, certainly compared with parts of Ukraine, the sort of life we can live here. We're not in danger of a missile coming through the window, a bomb being dropped on us. We can just imagine very easily how different life would be under those stressful conditions. We have, whatever your conditions there, I'm imagining you have some of the basics for a dignified life. You have other basic freedoms like religious freedom. We have the freedom to practice as we are doing here now. I can think of there's an order member called Vajra Chaksu, lives in Istanbul. He's not free to be open about his Buddhism in the way we are, because unfortunately the regime is oppressive of minorities in Turkey. We have the blessing, the great boon of the Dharma. Now, I don't know how you came across the Dharma. I came across it in a pub in Sheffield. A friend of mine, I was having a drink with a friend, and she said, I've just been to an introduction to Buddhism course around the corner in a Buddhist center. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. I've always been interested. I wanted to get more into Buddhism. And so I made mental note, and soon, this was in 25 years ago, I went around and went to the introduction to Buddhism course led by Amoga Vangsa. He's still alive and well, and I'll be forever grateful to Amoga Vangsa for opening the door to me to enter into a path that I have appreciated. You know, the fact that I'm here now says something about how much I've appreciated what he taught me in that introduction class. And we've got resources, you know. Maybe it was true Ratna, maybe it was another tradition through which you came, that you found the Dharma. But we have so many resources available to us. We go on the internet, and we can get in touch with any number of Buddhist traditions. We can delve into the teachings of Buddhism. So many YouTube videos, so many podcasts. It's wonderful. How blessed are we? What resources have we available to us? We were just speaking earlier about, you know, even the technology, you know, the fact that you're actually watching this on Zoom. You've got a computer or an iPhone or some device, you know. Glory be for technology allowing us, when it works, allowing us to tune in like this from the comfort of our own homes, and accessing the Dharma. And there's another important ingredient. You know, that you could be doing many other things than sitting here listening to me tonight. You could, I'm sure you could. There are parties going on out there. We can all imagine the alternatives. But you're here. You're on retreat. You're taking time out to meditate, to reflect, to listen to talks on the Dharma. And why would you do that? I imagine the reason is, in one word, it's Shraddha. It's wonderful word in the Buddhist lexicon. It's a Sanskrit word, and it means confidence, trust. So you've got some confidence, trust in the teachings of the Buddha. That's why you've given up all the other possible things you could be doing tonight to come and listen to the Dharma. What a gift that is. There's something in you that resonates with the teachings of the Dharma. And that's what's brought you. So that in itself, that's a capacity to open. Bolila was talking about opening earlier today. You've got that capacity to open to the truth. That's a gift. What a blessing that is. And you've got the faculties to do that. You know, you're of sound mind and sufficiently of sound body to be here listening. But perhaps most fundamentally of all, you have awareness. You have the self-reflexive awareness that we as human beings have. How easy to take this for granted. This capacity to choose, to be aware of our environment and to choose our direction, to choose how we respond to the environment. On a moment-to-moment basis, so we have this teaching of the gap. So you have an unpleasant experience. I don't know, someone criticizes you. It's painful. You have a choice. Do I just become defensive and criticize back and watch how it escalates? or do I accept the criticism, say, oh yeah, I'll ponder that, you know, maybe there's a bit of truth in that criticism. Or you have a pleasant experience, you see a beautiful person walking down the street, and that's a pleasant experience. Do you immediately kind of latch on and think, oh, I'd love to get to know that person, possessive, I want to acquire, you know, craving, lust, all of that? Or do you just think, oh, the world's a better place for the fact that there's a beautiful person walking down the street, glory be. We have choices in how we respond to the stimuli in our environment. How amazing a capacity that is that we have as a result of this gift of self-reflexive awareness. And what this gift ultimately gives us is the possibility of enlightenment. And this is not something that we acquire. This is something that's already there. We just have to connect with it. Sometimes called our Buddha nature. What we are at our most fundamental, our deepest level, is this potential to see the way things really are, to be compassionate with a capital C, to be equanimous in the face of whatever the world throws at us. That's all there within us. The capacity is all, it's there within us. It's this jewel in the lotus. It's the Mani Padme Hum. The jewel in the lotus. Can we live from this Buddha nature, our Buddha nature, our deepest potential? A metaphor for it is this kind of perfect mirror that reflects reality. But of course, the problem is mirrors can attract dust and maybe a bit of mud. But the mirror is still shining bright. Can we remove the dirt? So that's what our spiritual life is about, is removing the dirt. It's not about getting something, acquiring something. It's about removing, taking away, letting go. Another beautiful image is the jewel in the rubbish heap. Again, the jewel is perfect. We just need to find it, brush it off, wash it down, and hold it in our hands, this Buddha nature. Another one of the endowments traditionally described in the Tibetan tradition is being free from extreme states of mind. So being obsessed by craving, maybe addiction, how that would cut across any of our activities. Maybe we've experienced that already and we know full well how disruptive of a flourishing life addiction can be. So to be free of addiction, what a blessing. To be free of hatred, of fear, of competitiveness. These states of mind, these extreme states of mind that are characterized by the images in the wheel of life. You have the hungry ghosts that characterize craving, extreme craving. You have the hell realm beings who characterize hatred, and the asuras who characterize competitiveness. Another great blessing. I won't go on and on about blessings, but I've got to say something about friends. What an amazing blessing we have. Maybe that can include family. Maybe not, but we have the gift of people who have nurtured us, educated us, helped us through life, people who have shared their lives with us, with whom we've been able to share our lives, people who share our values, who support us, who inspire us, who embody what we want to be. And a beautiful practice here, of course, is if we want to be practical about this, cultivating gratitude, is rejoicing. It's when we rejoice in ourselves and just point out how we have got to where we are, but also other people. We can rejoice in the good qualities, the skills, the attainments, the good sense of humor, all those things that we find attractive in other people, their eloquence, their intelligence, commitment. How about telling them how much we appreciate them and these qualities? It is a particular, I suppose, tradition, you could say, within Sri Ratna, and it's a beautiful one. Where, say, around the center, for example, we often on birthdays or when somebody's leaving, or maybe for no reason at all, we just tell the person that something that we noticed about them we really appreciate. We feel blessed by them sharing their lives with us. Maybe I'll just finish by saying a few more things about how radical gratitude is in the context of our modern consumer society. It's subversive is gratitude. Consumer society thrives on unmet desires, on discontent, and gratitude is an assertion of abundance. Now, I want to tell you about this figure who is the Buddhist epitome, the Buddhist embodiment of abundance. And it's a figure, an archetypal Buddha figure called Ratnasambhava. I hope you can see him. And he is holding what's called a Chintamani, or the wish-fulfilling jewel, in his left hand, and that represents the Buddha nature. And it's like once you have that, which we all have, then you have everything you possibly need. The other hand of Ratnasambhava, which incidentally means born of the jewel, so he's very much focused around the jewel. It's Ratnasambhava. Anyway, the other hand is in the gesture of giving. So Ratnasambhava has everything and has got everything to give. Traditionally, he is yellow in color. He's the archetypal Buddha of the south, of the sunshine. And hopefully we'll have time a little bit later to chant the mantra of Ratnasambhava after the meditation to conclude tonight's session. It's a very simple mantra, Ratnasambhava Trang. Trang being the seed syllable associated with Ratnasambhava. So, abundance, gratitude is an assertion of abundance. It's an attitude of contentment, of fullness, a sense of being wealthy, rather than that attitude of scarcity that is promoted by a consumer society, because it furthers the ends of a consumer society, which, as the name suggests, is consumption. Because you need to consume to be happy. And this attitude of gratitude, That's got a ring to it, hasn't it? The attitude of gratitude is radical because it asserts that possessions are not what are going to make you happy. Yes, they're useful, but they're not going to make you happy. The best use for things, for possessions, is to give them rather than to possess them. So isn't that a different emphasis? Rather than being possessions, they are possible gifts. Rather than being commodities, they can be gifts. What a more positive take on those possessions that we might have or acquire. So it's not about not having things, it's about attitude towards those things that we do have. And this is a medicine, this attitude of gratitude, the sense of abundance, is medicine for land as well as people. Because the damage we're doing to the planet is, of course, based on overconsumption and exploitation in an unsustainable way. Trying to meet desires that can never be met, because the system just ratchets up the need, invents the need. Finally, I'll just say I was very inspired a while back reading a book by Robin Wall Kimmerer. Maybe you're familiar with Robin Wall Kimmerer. She's a botanist from the Potawatomi. Hopefully, I'm pronouncing this right. The Potawatomi culture, a tribe from people from the Great Plains in America, and they have a culture of gratitude. They're part of the Onondaga nature. And their culture of gratitude is expressed through what they call the Thanksgiving address. It's a thanksgiving for all those gifts that they have, they recognize. And this is central to their social engagement, so that they won't start any meeting, any gathering, without reciting the Thanksgiving address. It's kind of their highest priority. They describe it as the words that come before all else. So it's kind of a protocol that could be the children or could be the elders who read the Thanksgiving address. And just to give you a sample, we are thankful to our mother, the earth, for she gives us everything that we need for life. She supports our feet as we walk about upon her. It gives us joy that she still continues to care for us, just as she has from the beginning of time. To our mother, we give thanks, love, and respect. Now our minds are one. So it's a way of bringing the tribe together. Now our minds are one in gratitude. What a wonderful way, or pretext to be coming together. Gratitude. Now our minds are one. And in the Thanksgiving address, it's kind of an inventory of the natural world and like giving thanks for all those elements of the natural world, whether it's the elements, water, fire, and air. Are they the animals and the sea, plant life, bird life, the sun, moon, and stars? And with it, with this listing, this inventory, comes a pledge of interdependence, a sense that these are not separate from us. We are not separate from them. Our relationship with the natural world in this culture of gratitude is one of reciprocity, interconnection and reciprocity. Gifts are given, gifts are received. And every gift that we have, in a sense you could say, is a responsibility to. That duties towards each other and towards the natural world. go with gifts. Duties and gifts are just two sides of the same coin. Okay, let's change gear and do a meditation in which we explore or cultivate gratitude with a focus on the year just coming to a conclusion tonight. So I invite you to adopt your meditation posture. So a practice of the cultivation of gratitude. So I invite you to drop into your body, down from your heads. As Maitri Pushpa was saying earlier, say hello to your body. Notice the sounds. Maybe there are, like here, some fireworks going off in the distance. Just noticing the sounds without getting caught up, without commentary. Noticing the smells, however subtle. I invite you now to turn your attention to your sense of touch. Maybe the contact between your clothes and your skin. Between one hand and the other, noticing the softness of flesh. Now, feeling the pressure at those points of support, whatever is supporting you, a chair, cushion, mat. Really feel the contact and the pressure at the points of support. And I invite you to relax your weight, yield your weight under gravity into those points of support. Particularly on the out-breath. Relaxing a little bit more with each out-breath. And I invite you now to have a sense of your heart space, whatever that might mean for you. How's your heart? So I'm going to invite you now to reflect, remember, recall the blessings that you might have experienced this past year. Starting with those fundamentals, the basics of life. Perhaps you can remember specific events, occasions when there's been food on the table. Occasions when you've simply drawn water from the tap. Hopefully you've had a roof over your head this past year with the basics of sanitation, and then hopefully you have felt some sense of safety on the streets as you go about your business. you've had around you on occasion, and maybe you can remember particular events when family or friends have gathered around and you've enjoyed their company. Hopefully over the year you've had occasions of good health. You've got sufficient health to be here now, listening in. You've got those fundamentals, those faculties, physical, mental, emotional, that have allowed you to engage with the world this past year. Perhaps this past year you have made use of public facilities like the NHS, transport system. Your bins have been collected. Maybe over the past year, you've been able to enjoy some experiences of culture, like galleries, museums, theatre, films, music. I invite you to remember particular incidents, bring them to mind, see if some sense of blessing, of gratitude arises for these cultural gifts. Now I invite you to bring to mind any teachers whom you've appreciated this year. Now, that could include a broad range of teachers, from Dharma teachers to gym instructors to driving instructors. Maybe you've done a language course, listened to an educational podcast. To bring to mind any opportunities you've had this year to learn, to grow. I invite you to bring to mind your friends, people whose qualities you enjoy, appreciate. I invite you to bring particular instances of encounter and enjoyment and mutual appreciation this year. I invite you now to reflect on all those people you don't know personally, but whose work facilitates your life or has facilitated your life over the past year, whether they be tube train drivers or supermarket checkout staff, health workers, delivery drivers. The list is almost endless. Consider the blessings that these unnamed, often unnamed, unknown, unfamiliar individuals contribute to the richness of your life. I invite you to consider your last meal, looking at one of the main ingredients from your last meal. I don't know, perhaps potato. Think about people who planted potato, seed potato, who tilled the soil, who nourished the soil, watered perhaps. Who picked the crop, who processed it in whatever way, for transport to the shops, to the wholesalers, and then out to the retailers. So many people involved, so many people whose names you don't know, involved in getting that food onto your table. if at any stage you find yourself distracted, thoughts wandering over hill and dale, that's totally natural. I invite you just to notice and to bring your attention back to thoughts about people, unknown people, unnamed people who have benefited you. Your connection with them is through the things you use, you eat. I invite you now to reflect on people who have caused you difficulty over the past year, excluding anybody who's caused you so much difficulty that it might cause you overwhelm. So out of 10, maybe difficulty, most 6 out of 10. And consider that you may have experience some silver lining through the difficulty, that they may have had some role, despite the difficulty, in bringing you blessings. Shanti Deva, I think 8th century Buddhist teacher, monk, he tells us that these difficult people are our greatest friends. They give us the opportunity to learn patient forbearance, one of the most helpful spiritual qualities. Maybe this reflection helps you to find gratitude towards people who have caused you difficulty this year. So be careful not to get caught up with thoughts proliferating around the difficulty or the people. Just see if you can find some sense of gratitude for what you have learned as a result of these difficulties, ways in which you have grown perhaps from adversity. I invite you now to consider all the people who might have come to mind during this meditation, including yourself, friends, unknown people, difficult people. Consider the benefits they have all brought you. On the strength of your gratitude, can you wish them all well, equally, without bias, the friends, the strangers, the difficult people, friendly people, yourself. May they all be well and happy and free from suffering. I invite you now to consider everyone on this retreat. We're all here supporting each other in one temporary community of practitioners. We're here for each other on this event. Can you contact a sense of gratitude for this presence and support that we each offer each other? I invite you to extend your gratitude and your well-wishing to other living beings, other than humans, such as plants and trees that provide the oxygen for us to breathe. Can you extend your gratitude further to all living beings with whom we share this planet, whose lives, whose presence enrich the world, our world beyond measure? Can you extend your gratitude even to the elements, those fundamentals of your life, earth, air, fire, and water. And can you extend your gratitude to the sun and moon and stars for according to the Buddhist vision of dependent origination, we are intimately connected with all beings. All beings in the cosmos.
Om Rat Lasam Bhur Trang. 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 Om Ratna Sambha Purtrain. 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 Om Ratna Sambha Purtrain.
Thank you all for joining in tonight's session. It's been beautiful to practice with you, and I look forward to seeing you at 11 o'clock when Bodhi Leela will be leading us into the new year. See you soon.
And you might want to bring paper and something to write on to that final session.